Welcome to the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast.
He said that?
Yeah, that's what Dusty said. We're back for another week, and we're doing our top 10 pro wrestling couples part D. We're going to be doing 5 through 1. Clint is not going to be here this time.
Aww.
So it's just me, Doug, and E-Nasty. But it's going to be a fun episode.
What's up?
And we're excited to get into it. Now, without further ado, we have the man of the hour, the man that's too sweet to be sour, the man that hardly ever takes a shower. We have my brother, Doug.
Yeah, a man who's drank too many milkshakes today. I'm on my third.
What?
Yeah, I had one at lunch.
Oh, jeez.
One was bought for me at lunch. I just had the two now. You're going to have to roll me through the door.
And then we have my little lunchbox salmon. Eric's here.
What's up?
How we doing?
Good.
Salmon.
Looking forward to doing this.
Are you?
Yeah.
And Eric's here before he goes off to Malaysia.
He's going to Europe. Milan.
Same thing, Malaysia, Milan. It's only a couple syllables.
Wasn't
off.
Milan Malaysia?
Yeah.
I saw a few more episodes, two more weeks.
Of Mulan?
Not Mulan.
Yeah.
Mulan. But Mulan's from Malaysia.
Milan.
And Milan is from Mulan. We're doing great so far. We're here to count down the rest of our top 10 pro wrestling couples, whether it's relationships, buddies, or if they're, you know, doing the dance. So
making a little love and getting down tonight.
Yes.
Or this early evening.
Yeah. And it's going to be a lot of fun. Does anybody have a worker of the week?
Not really. I didn't watch a lot of wrestling this week. I mean, I kind of kept up on it. Like, I know the stuff that happened, but it's just like, it's getting to the point where it's starting to get boring again.
Eric?
I'll say Adam Cole. Yeah, I know he's got that cool play.
Yeah.
Boom.
Mr. Boom Boom. I don't have a worker of the week either, but so we'll get right into our list then, all right, gentlemen?
Yeah. I mean, there's really not much to get into that's not going
to,
you know.
All right, just to give the folks, my 11 through 6 was
10 through 6.
Shut the fuck up. But my picks last week were this. William Regal and Eugene. Hall and Nash. Bradshaw and Taka. AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels. And I forgot the other one.
Whoops.
But it's on tape, so go back and listen to it. It was a good episode.
All right, I had Hurricane and Rosie, Eric Young and ODB, Eddie Guerrero and Chyna, Kane and X-Pac, and Torrey Wilson and Tajiri.
Very well said.
Thanks.
All right, Eric.
I had Adam Cole and Doctor, DMD, Britt Baker, Matt Panona, and Kelsey. I can't pronounce his name. Edge and Vicky, Cody and Randy, and Hogan and his sidekick. The one that licks his ass, Eric Bischoff.
So you had all married couples.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Besides Edge and Vicky.
Well, they were married on screen.
All right, Doug. Who's your number 5?
Hardcore and Crash Holly.
All right.
Because and the funny thing is you had two family members. Well, they're not even necessarily family members, but they really didn't get along.
No.
Like they like beating each other up, but then they realized that they could be, you know, a pretty decent tag team. And because Crash was shorter, like Hardcore would just smack the shit out of him. But they really were a good tag team, and some of the shit that they came up with, like Crash was hilarious.
Yeah.
And Hardcore, for a dick, Hardcore Holly could be very, like, he had a very dry sense of humor.
Yeah.
But it was also funny listening to him pick on Crash.
Oh, for sure it was. And he was a good, like, he was a good, like, straight man in the duo.
Yeah.
Like, Crash could do all the fun stuff and, you know, be very bombastic and very out there. And then Hardcore would kind of bring it in. And he'd be more, like, strict and affirmative and to the point.
Yeah, and, like, when they had Holly or when they had Molly aboard, it was fun, too, because, like, you kind of get to see, like, that family dynamic or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Even though they weren't related at all, but they were, like, they were all fun to watch.
They were. And it's one of those, I feel like they don't get talked about enough. And I feel, because that tag team division was so stacked.
Yeah.
Because you have, because when you talk about Attitude Era tag teams, three big ones come to mind. And it's the three that everybody knows, the Dudleys, the Hardys, and Edge and Christian. And then if you, like, want to think...
The Headbangers, Kai and Tai, and the Posse.
Well, that's the thing, though. If you want to dig a little, well, you'll be like, well, Too Cool... Too Cool had a hell of a run. Too Cool was actually a pretty good tag team back then. You know, the Headbangers, a very, like, underrated good tag team back then. You know, and then your new generation tag teams that you love so much, obviously, like the, you know, the Godwins and...
Mm-hmm.
Shit like that, but the Attitude Era, and even their like lesser tag teams like Hardcore and Crash Holly, or you know even like thrown together ones like who was fucking Al Snow teaming with for the longest time?
Steve Black, and by the way, it's gonna be on my list in a little while.
Oh shit! Well, that's a good one too. But there was just a lot of oddball ones, but this one it wasn't an oddball one, but it was. I don't know. It just worked. And even though I do think that their best stuff is separate from each other.
Yeah.
Because I think Hardcore Holly's best run to me was the broken neck thing and then coming back for Lesnar. They didn't give him nearly enough time for how over he was. And to me, that was like the best version of Hardcore Holly.
It was. And Crash's best version, I still think Crash should have wrestled Kurt Angle in the finals of the King of the Ring.
Yeah.
Okay, because he beat Bull Buchanan, and then he got Kurt. And
I mean, Crash's stuff is the Hardcore title.
Yeah.
If you want to. I mean, he's had good matches. He got to do fun stuff. But the 24/7 rule in the Hardcore title really made Crash.
Right. No,
he made it more.
I mean, I agree with that. But, like, I still think, and you may have disagreed with me, or Clint has disagreed with me, or one of you guys that pisses me off. You know, disagreed with me about that. But, like,
about what?
Because I've always said that I believe Crash should have been in the final. I don't think he should have won it. Like, Kurt was the right person to win it.
Okay.
But I do think...
What did Crash have in the... Who did he have in the finals again?
Kurt had Rikishi in the final.
That's not a good final matchup?
It is. The story they were telling was that, like, Rikishi's shoulder was all fucked up and all that.
I think what it really is, and you might not be wrong, but the talent pool was so major back then. And they had so many guys that could do good shit. Like, your lesser guy, like, your Blackmans was really good and could be a main event elsewhere, you know? Like even the lesser, like, the Crash Hollies. Crash Holly could put on some... Not like he was the greatest wrestler, but he could put on some great matches, yeah. And he was great entertainment value.
I mean, and I think, like, that King of the Ring, like, that Crash wrestled Kurt in the semifinals. Like, Crash came out later on when Briscoe and Patterson were doing their drag fest.
Yeah.
And he won the Hardcore title back. So I can understand why they didn't go that route, because they needed Crash to win the title.
Well, and he was too small for the time. Vince wasn't in the tiny yet. If you weren't Shawn Michaels and you weren't 6 foot, you can go suck a dick.
I mean, and but
am I wrong?
Huh?
Am I wrong?
No, you're not.
I think just I don't think he's too short. That's not me saying that, but I think like to Vince's standards at the time and to people's standards,
he beat Paul Buchanan in the earlier round.
Yeah, but and I'm not saying that doesn't mean he can't beat taller guys, but I think that nobody looked at Crash Holly and saw a main eventer. Not a single person in the company did. We did.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. And he could have been. Maybe Crash Holly was really fucking good. But nobody thought that about him. No one thought he was going to go past the mid-card.
There was
And I don't mean to be mean saying that. Yeah. I'm just telling the truth.
I had an edition, and you are right. I had an edition of the WWF magazine from the 2000s, and they had a list of, like, top five most trustworthy and top five most untrustworthy.
Yeah.
Crash was number one in the trustworthy category. And the caption, the paragraph pretty much read like this. This guy has been picked on by everybody on the entire WWF roster from main eventers to tag teams to light heavyweights to referees to Godfather's hosts. And this guy still seems like one of the nicest people, one of the most loyal guys, you know, in the company or on WWF TV.
Let's stay on the show.
Yeah. but that whole article is just like just saying, you know, how good of a guy Crash Holly was. And, you know, behind that, like, I really don't know how he was behind the scenes, and we're not here to talk about that.
Yeah, I don't know.
But, like, and even Hardcore Holly, like, Hardcore Holly could be that dick on
TV. He seems like the sweetest guy.
Yeah.
I mean, from the character, even a couple of the shooter interviews that he did before his untimely passing. Because I think he did one, at least.
He did one, like, right after, I think right after WWE released him, right? And then he went to TNA for a little bit?
I think so. I could be wrong. But he's always seemed very sweet. And I liked the Crash character because to me it was always like me as a kid without my Adderall. Like, it was like ADD as like a personification. Just the way all the fast talking and going for it's just I thought Crash was like an interesting character.
Yeah.
It was like a little kid, but as a grown man, and I don't know.
They did a segment one time. He was at the WWF New York when they were really promoting that, like in its not early stages, but like the summer of like or whatever, and they showed him at the bar, right? And he's just like, "Oh yeah, I'll take a beer." And they're like, "All right, can we see your ID, please, sir?" So he goes to get, so he shows him an ID, and then the bartender's just like, "Sir, you're not." He goes, "Sir, you're not old enough." And it's just like one of the funniest fucking things, because obviously he's old enough. He's a fucking wrestler.
Yeah. I mean, technically, you could wrestle at like 18.
Yeah. I mean, and what's funny, well, first of all, Crash's career actually started in the mid-90s.
Really?
Yeah. Well, he was 30. He was 33 when he passed in 2003.
Wow.
I
20 years ago.
Yeah. I miss him to death. I thought he was a tremendous talent.
Oh, he was. He was. And he had such a good little run. I feel bad they didn't really have anything for him in the Ruthless Aggression era, because I feel like he could have stayed for a while.
Yeah.
They kind of did him a disservice. But if they don't have anything for you, they don't have anything for you.
Right.
I wish they did, because Crash was always awesome. It was a good pick. Like I said, and I remember very little of them together, too. Because my favorite Crash stuff isn't with Hardcore. My favorite Hardcore stuff isn't with Crash. But I don't disagree with your pick. And me saying that isn't disagreeing with your pick. I just think that they have better stuff elsewhere.
They do. I just kind of liked when they did interact, I thought it was.
Yeah.
I thought it was good.
All right, Eric, who's your number five?
The Generation X. Shawn Michaels and Triple H.
Okay.
These two are best friends. Yeah. But, yeah, these two are best friends. These two have been together since the mid-90s. They're attached at the hip. They work together now. Sean runs NXT. Wade runs main roster. What else is there to say about those two? They had
plenty,
one of the best
but,
teams in
well,
yeah, I know.
And that's
but they
the
had
thing.
One of the best feuds ever.
Yes, they did. And that's the thing about these two is that everybody likes to shit on them as a duo, especially Doug.
Yeah.
And a lot of people like to talk shit about them. And to be honest, there's a lot of merit to talk shit there. And I understand. And the whole, like, Sean's reign of terror and, you know, Triple H was kind of his little buddy and shit like that. And I understand. But
understand
it is
too.
Also
yeah.
not an incorrect statement to say that no other duo on anybody's list has made more magic than these two, whether it's yep. together or separate. They've had way too many entertaining to the fact we could do a top 10 DX moments and matches. We could do a top 10 Shawn versus HBK if we wanted to, or Shawn versus Triple H. It'd be weird if he wrestled himself.
Yeah.
But we could do something like that. I don't want to, but I'm just saying we could. They have so many good men. The Hell in a Cell, the Three Stages of Hell, the fucking the street fight at SummerSlam was really good. The you can't forget
match.
And if you're a Benoit guy and you love those Benoit matches, who was a part of that with him? Shawn.
Right.
And he made
Shawn
those
Michaels.
Matches great. Those triple threats were fucking awesome.
Yeah, and here
that Royal Rumble Last Man Standing was awesome.
Right, that was probably like that was the best match of that undercard.
Yes.
Now the thing about the two of them, and trust me, I have talked my fair share of shit about both of them
so much.
But
yeah.
you can't argue with the success that they have had,
no.
and I do think to a point, they both did earn the success that they had.
Oh, yeah.
Now, and sometimes, yes, you do kind of have to step on other people to get that success. But I do feel like that, like, if the Triple H and Shawn that are around now, like, if they, like, were in charge back then, like they are now, like, if they go back into a time machine.
Yeah.
And, like, somehow, like, they're in charge of, like, this alternate universe, and they see their younger selves.
Yeah.
They're going to fire their younger selves.
Yeah, but I feel like they had to grow as human beings to be here.
And I do think, and I 100% believe that they both did that.
Oh, of course. They both did.
Because
it's just, the thing with them is that no matter what you want to say about behind the scenes, on screen, there's not a lot of bad content between the two. To where you could say, oh, like, the match between those two sucked. Or, like, even if they had their worst match is still pretty good. Anything they've done together is good. Either stuff with DX was good. When they came back and rejuvenated in 2006, people loved it. And that stayed around to like, 2011. And people still liked it. We were at the fucking Raw with the glow sticks and shit, and Hornswoggle and shit. And we loved it. You know, people fucking, like, they've always kind of been good. They've always been good. And they've always done good stuff
yep.
together. Whether it's against each other or with each other. So to me, this
exactly.
could easily be a number one on anybody's list.
Yeah. And
yeah.
I don't care if you like them. I'm just saying them like as workers.
Right. And the funny thing is that when DX came back in 2006, like Shawn did not want DX to come back because he didn't want to do the shit that he did back in like 97, 98.
Yeah. That's fair.
Because, you know, he had young kids and he's just like, you know what? I can't fucking, we can't do this shit.
But DX coming back was so cool because other guys were getting into the main event. They were letting Cena and Edge do their thing and Randy and Batista. And those two were finally having fun.
Yeah.
And they were just sitting back and joking and having a good time. And that was a good role for them.
Yeah. What was funny was the fact that like the when they were doing the thing with the Spirit Squad and they had the cheerleaders come out and Shawn brought out the little guy cheerleaders.
Yeah,
which basically looked like my entire group of friends from back home in Newfane. and like And then Triple H brought out the female cheerleaders, and Shawn puts the blindfold on so he doesn't get in trouble with his wife at home. And then, you know, they beat up this regular Spirit Squad, and then they have the little guys pull their pants down.
Ugh.
And JR goes, because they actually had two fat guys.
Yeah.
Like two fat little guys. And JR's like, oh, my God, I've never seen so much crack. Like, and shit like that is funny. And Triple H and Shawn have always been, and I can appreciate it more now. Like back then, like their early stuff, I didn't find funny. I just found them to be
obnoxious
and annoying. But like as, again, like as they get older, it's just like, okay, they're funny now.
Yeah.
But
they would even have like genuine moments peppered throughout that run. Like, remember that Fatal 4-Way? I forget which pay-per-view, but it was for the title. Cena was in it, and I can't remember who the other guy was. And it was a Fatal 4-Way, and it was two members of DX. Or it was the... That wasn't the...
Survivor Series is a triple threat. It wasn't a 4-Way.
And it was them two and Cena. And Shawn starts it out by super kicking Triple H.
Yeah.
That was like a genuine moment, and it was cool. And then you see this coldness, like, go on Shawn's face. And he just, like, starts it off, and he kicks his friend in the face. And then he's just like, this guy, no matter how close these two are, this guy wants the fucking belt.
Yeah.
And it's just, and then he's staring at Cena, and Cena's got a look on his face. And, like, that just worked. And shit like that. And they would do shit like that all the time. Even an end of an era match, which should not have worked, old Undertaker, old Triple H, that match was great. And Shawn was a fundamental part of it as the referee.
Right.
And him telling Triple H to, like, give up and him trying to help him and shit. Like, whatever they're together, it's usually magic. Unless you're talking that Brothers of Destruction DX Saudi Arabia match.
Right. It was funny, too, and then we can move on to the next pick, but, like, the whole thing, like, after Shawn kicked Hunter... Like, the next night on Raw, Hunter looks at him and goes, so, what was with the kick last night, huh? And then Shawn's just like, he's like, relax, Shawn. I would have done the same thing to you.
It was good.
Yeah.
It was very good.
All right. You ready for mine?
Yeah.
I have Triple H in China.
Yep. That's a really good pick. And we're not going to get into, obviously, you know, they had a bad ending, which
mm-hmm.
It happens. Relationships do run their course.
Yes. And it sucks the way it ended, and I feel bad for her, and I feel bad for everybody involved, and it's very messy. But, I'm not even really talking about the real-life relationship. I'm talking about the gimmick and the fact that this was like one of the first ever, because I was also thinking about maybe like Santino and Beth or something like that. But this was really the first one, and it was the first time we really saw like a really big chick, and she was defending like a smaller dude.
Yeah.
And she was like the muscle, and she was making sure, and you have a chicken shit heel with a big strong girl at his side. And that just worked for me. And it like made him look even more like a pussy. And it just, it really worked. That relationship and that, like, gimmick, just, it was perfect for them, too.
So, if you, you probably haven't seen China's biography yet, Legend's biography yet, right? The A&E special?
No.
Okay. So, they went into that. And, like, they were talking about how, like, when she first came in, a lot of the guys were very much against.
Yeah, because they didn't want to do bumps to a chick.
Were very much against them hitting her, especially if they couldn't hit them back. Like, Bart Gunn, like, when Bart Gunn took the bump, Bart Gunn wanted to hit her. And they're just like, Bart, you can't do that. So Bart actually said, all right, take me off TV then for a while. And then he came back a year later as a member of the Midnight Express.
Good idea, Bert.
And then, like, even, like, you know, Ahmed Johnson got pissed off. But Mick Foley was just like, you know what? We might be on to something here.
Yeah, it was smart.
So when they did, like, the King of the Ring, he actually went up to Joni and he said, you can do whatever you want to me. If you want to hit me or whatever, do whatever. And so, like, you know, she beats the shit out of Mick. The guys see this, and they're like, wait a minute. Mick's actually letting this happen to him? Okay, we're on to something here.
Yeah. It was more revolutionary thinking by Mick, but it just, it was perfect for what it was, because it was two people that not only were they already seeing each other, but you have the muscle, which is usually, if a dude has muscle, they have another dude. Just
yeah.
A bigger dude. This was kind of the first time we saw a really big, like, woman, and she's beating up the dudes, and she's defending a dude. And it just worked. And it even, like I said, Santino, it worked with Santino and Beth, too. And it's worked in other scenarios. That always works, but this was the first. So I had to put it on my list.
Yes. And, no, they were, like, it was perfect. And to be honest with you, I liked them better as heels.
Of course, they couldn't be babyface.
Well, I mean, they tried the babyface route.
It sucked.
But, like, they were better as
heels. The only thing that came out of that was the ladder match with The Rock.
Right.
That was the only good part of that babyface run, was he got that classic SummerSlam ladder match with The Rock. That was all they got out of that.
And plus, like, even when they teased that thing to where they were...
And she was a fundamental part of that, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. When they did, like, the little thing where the two of them were kind of going against each other, I didn't like that.
Yeah.
Because it didn't work.
No.
They had to be with each other. And then, like, when you separate the two of them, which I always thought was actually a mistake, because I felt like, well, no, because...
Well, it's not a mistake.
Well, it wasn't a mistake for him, because he was able to kind of grow and evolve. I mean, she did, but you always... but I don't know. I always felt like if they would have... I always felt like they should have found their way back to each other.
Storyline-wise, but it could never happen because of what was happening in real life.
Yeah.
But with real life, that's the only thing that got in the way, because she was on that Superstar Women's title run, and she was doing great. And people loved her, and she came out with the bazooka.
Which, unfortunately, she did not like.
Yeah, she didn't want to do it, and she was sick, and she just didn't like... She didn't like the fact that her fucking old boyfriend's fucking the boss's daughter now, you know, and I don't blame her. And it bothers her. And yeah. she wanted an absurd amount of money to stay, and they said, we can't do it.
Yeah, like, you go up to Jim Ross and you say, all right, I want $1 million. I want to be paid as much as Stone Cold Steve Austin. I want $1 million contract, and I'm not negotiating.
Yeah, you
and
can't do
that. Jim Ross is just like, all right, if you're not negotiating, we got to let you go. And she's like, Jared, what are you talking about? Like, it's me. And he goes, Joni, you can't come up and say $1 million, non-negotiable, that's what I want, and I'm not going down. Like, you can't do that. If you're not going to negotiate and we can't do what you want, then it's over. Like,
yeah.
And it sucked for her, but it's just like, it was the attitude.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily blame her for having that attitude because, you know, of how things were going down.
And she was becoming a star. She had the Playboy deal. Little girls were coming up to her all the time and saying, you're my hero. So when a person does that, they do start to think that they can be bigger than the WWE. We know how it usually works out.
Yeah.
And WWE loves to remind people how it works out. Because they love for people to know you can't make it without us.
Right.
That's why it's like they really swallowed their pride on Cody. To bring Cody in with his theme song, his haircut, the American Nightmare, all that. That's Vince finally saying, all right, something worked that we didn't do.
Right. And that's like...
They don't do that a lot.
No. And I think he's the first one. Well, no, because they let Truth... Because Truth was using the What's Up theme in TNA because he sang it, right?
Yeah.
All right. So, but that doesn't necessarily count because it's...
Yeah, but who owns the What's Up theme now?
WWE does.
There you go. Who owns Cody's shit? I'm pretty sure Cody does. I might be wrong, though.
Cody does, I mean.
Are they right about that? Because I know, because Cody told the story, and Cody said He's like, well, I told them I really want to keep my theme song. I got to do this. And Vince was like, well, yeah, bud, that's what I'm paying for. So he might have bought it, but that to me, it's still a little different than Truth, because Truth wasn't a main event. He was a main eventer kind of in TNA, but Truth and Cody are two different situations going into WWE.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
But that's cool that they did that for Truth, too. All right, what's your number four?
The Macho King and Sensational Queen.
Oh, my God.
Macho King Randy Savage and Sensational Sherry. I know a lot of people are going to be like, you should have put Elizabeth on here, you stupid motherfucker. And Elizabeth was great, if you ask anybody except for our buddy Jimmy at work. But
you didn't like Macho Man?
No, he liked Macho Man. He did not like Elizabeth.
Oh, then he's not going to like Mike. Okay, never mind.
He doesn't like you anyway. Don't worry about it.
Serge, like, what the fuck did I do?
He's the one.
Yeah.
He's the one that complained about your Hall of Fame list.
Yeah, I know, but I never met the kid.
Oh, now he's calling him a kid. Dude, he's a black belt, Derek. You don't want
he's a black belt that's also 10 years older than you.
Well, age doesn't matter.
Oh. Yeah.
You're 10 years older than me, and no offense, bud. But
yeah, but I'm not a kid.
No, you're not a kid.
That's what I meant.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But anyway, so, but no, like, I picked Sensational Sherry because I felt like that was their best work was together.
Yeah.
Well, like, Savage is a heel.
Well, the thing about, and I can't really, and I didn't put Macho and Elizabeth on my list because I figured somebody did. And from the sounds of Eric, I think he made a good decision. And that's good. They should be number one for a lot of people. To me, I appreciate them both separately because Elizabeth made his babyface run, and
yeah,
he needed the prom queen. Like, Hogan had all the theatrics and Hogan, but Macho really benefited by having a beautiful woman by his side that was with him no matter – and it was like a married couple. It was like everyone – that's mom and dad at the WWF pretty much.
Yeah.
Like, you have Hogan and you have all these big, like, theatrics, but then you have, like, Macho and Elizabeth. And you know that they love each other, care for each other, and they're going to do anything for each other. And that's just – there's something inspiring about that. And that's why babyface couples do work. And that was the first – like, what? Not the first one because you had – you know, fucking Jimmy and Precious. You had so many. You had different ones. But this was the best one.
Yeah.
And the reason why him and Sherry is so good, because they said, all right, he's healed now. He's a bad guy. What is the antithesis to Miss Elizabeth? And if you think about that, the complete opposite of a human being, at least in front of the camera, because all I've heard is that Sherry is the nicest, greatest person ever. I've never heard a bad thing.
Sherry is.
That's one
absolutely
of the people I've never heard. She's one of the more beloved people ever.
Which is why, like, when she started kind of having, like, a downward spiral in WCW, like, people were just, like, they were heartbroken. And, like, Bischoff, when Bischoff said he had to fire her,
yeah,
he said it broke his heart.
Yeah, I'm sure it sucked. Because she was such a sweet lady. But in front of the camera, the complete opposite of Miss Elizabeth is Sherry.
Yeah.
And the way she acts, she's like you have a nice, prim, proper lady compared to like a ruthless broad that's going to fight you in a bar and that does not give a fuck about anything. And so she was perfect for Macho going into that heel run. And it's like, I'm the Macho King now. I need a right queen. And she was like a good Cersei Lannister for him. She was a good, bad, you know, woman. And just it completely worked. It's a great pick.
Yeah,
and they were awesome together.
I will say that.
And underrated, though, because I was going to put this and I didn't. Her and Sean is good, too.
Yeah. Now, I will say this as pertains to Randy Savage.
Yeah.
I keep forgetting to plug this. But in our Facebook group, Wrestling Through the Years, we've been having a King of the Ring tournament. We're in the finals right now. And it's Macho Man versus Sting. The winner of the tournament will have a top 10 moments and matches done about them on a future episode. And it looks like we're going to end up doing Savage. So,
nice.
So like Savage, yeah, Savage is not necessarily destroying Sting right now, but
beat the shit out of him.
Yeah. Had Eric voted the right way, it'd be Savage versus Piper right now.
You left it up there.
Wait, I didn't vote the right. Oh.
You never do anything right for Doug, bud. You get used to it. All right. Who's your number four, Eric?
I had Triple H in China, but I decided to change it. I put Ric Flair and Arn Anderson.
Because, you got Rick and Arn?
I mean, Rick and Arn.
It's a damn good pick.
You got to go
through. Yeah, I mean, they're not
my number one.
They're the old school Triple H and Shawn, best friends. I don't know what the relationship is now, but they were best friends. They were tied to the hip, four horsemen, the best probably heel group ever, in my opinion. But
one of the things that bothers me modern day is that we never see them together anymore. So it kind of almost feels like.
So, and again, I don't know how true this is, but apparently when Flair was in the coma, even though Arn and like other members of the Horsemen went to visit Rick in the hospital, WWE told, because Arn was on the outs with WWE. Arn had just been fired by WWE at the time.
You don't believe that, do you?
Rick has said that the Horsemen did not go to visit him in the hospital. Tony Schiavone has said that he was with Arn at the hospital in Flair's room when Flair was in the coma. So, I don't know. Like, I mean, to be honest with you, if Flair says that the Horsemen didn't visit him in the hospital, I don't believe a thing Flair says.
I mean, it's kind of hard to believe somebody that was in a coma. He doesn't know.
He said that that's what WWE told him.
That's weird. I don't know. I'd have to look into that before I actually comment on it.
Yeah,
but,
I mean, that's why he says he doesn't talk to them nowadays.
Okay.
Arn says that he doesn't, that him and Flair aren't as close as they used to, or they used to be, because Arn's wife remained friends with Beth Flair, who was one of Flair's wives.
Okay.
And because Arn's wife remained friends with Beth, Arn was pretty much told by his wife, it's like, we're choosing Beth's side. And Arn liked being married, so.
That's crazy. But I do, Eric, that's a great pick. It was a variation of my number one. I do have a different number one, just in case it got taken here. But they are the ultimate duo. I don't think of anybody except for the, especially like when you think of Horsemen, they were the closest between the two. They kept that group together for as long as they did.
Yeah.
Yep. That group was never that group unless you had those two and a variation around them. And I love Barry Windham. I love Barry. I love Tully. I love all, even only to an extent. I love the classic. I like Luger and them. I liked a lot of the Horsemen that got on board.
I was partial with Mongo.
Mongo and Benoit were fine, and Dean, and that was great. But you needed those two, or it wasn't even the Horsemen. You can't have Rick with three different guys. You can't have Arn with three different guys.
Well, and the funny thing is, too, is that, like, the variation of, like, Rick and Dean and Mongo and Benoit, that was Rick with three other guys, but you had Arn as the manager.
Yeah, that's
so
why it worked.
Arn had the JJ role.
And it worked because of Arn doing stuff like my spot and fucking like really getting energetic. And when he fucking announced, oh, I almost forgot the fourth horseman, Ric Flair.
Yeah.
And fucking Ric Flair comes out. It's just those two.
That was cool. I had goosebumps watching that.
That is one of my favorite moments in wrestling to this day. And Ric Flair is not my favorite of all time. He is in my top 10. I'm not like Doug to where I'm not a Flair guy because I do like Flair. But that is one of my my top three favorite promos of all time. That beats the pipe bomb for me. That beats so many things for the emotion in that fucking room. and Rick going, "Fire me! I'm already fired! Fire me! I'm already fired!" And screaming in the ring, and the horsemen are together, and the crowd's going fucking bananas. That is one of the best moments I've ever seen.
And
it was real.
I agree with that.
And that's one of, like, the best, like, head-to-head, like, Monday Night War battles.
Yeah.
Because the Raw they had on that night was fucking stacked. You know, because you had Austin versus – you had Austin versus Shamrock in the main event. You had Undertaker versus Mankind. Rock versus Kane, Triple H, Owen, you know, all this other stuff. You had like 9 matches in a 2-hour show. And then you had like this 3-hour Nitro that had Goldberg and Sting in the main event. And then this Horseman deal.
Yeah.
Along with
it was
other
Charlotte,
stuff.
Right?
But it's because of...
Yes, it was there.
What? I couldn't
it
hear
it. It was
me.
In Charlotte.
It was in Charlotte.
Yes. So... But because of that Horseman, reunion, that is what won Nitro the night is Ric Flair returning, because that's what a lot of people wanted to see, because at that time nobody thought Flair was coming back.
We should do a war dump on that.
So
and they were like legit buddies behind the scenes too, and they were like. When you hear the stories, like when Eric Bischoff finally got to the WWE and that first night that he was going to be the manager of Raw, and they were backstage, and Arn like blocked off a door for Rick, and like Arn blocked off and made sure the coast was clear, and Rick was going to fist fight Eric.
Yeah.
And that's a real story, too. Eric will tell it to you.
Well, yeah, because like he started having flashbacks or whatever.
Yeah, and he started living – because Eric Bischoff – or Ric Flair, and I love Ric Flair – and I don't blame him because he's lived so much life and all of his life has been around the business. But he does have that Bret Hart effect sometimes of taking himself and the business way too seriously.
Yeah.
And working himself into a shoot. He's done that a few times.
Which, by the way...
And if we were in it, we would too.
Well, yeah, no, exactly.
Because we do that in real life all the time.
Well, first of all, the whole heat with Flair and Bischoff... Flair was supposed to have off a weekend
for Reed's
wrestling tournament.
Yes.
Bischoff's secretary, Jamie Angle, lost the fucking paperwork.
Yes.
Okay. So when they started advertising Flair to do this thing on Thunder, Flair said, "Eric, I'm not going to show. I got the night off. Like, I have the time off. I'm watching Reed wrestle." He goes, "Rick, you never filled out the paperwork." "Yes, I did." They could never find the paperwork.
Yeah.
So, like, Bischoff, you know,
yeah, but,
not thinking he was wrong.
And they had beef then, but that was in, like, 98, wasn't it?
Yeah. And this is all the way – and then, like, in 2002, Flair just, like – because
they all worked with each other in 99 and 2000, and they made an angle out of that, and it was a thing, and – and then they kept working together, and it was fine in WCW.
Yeah, and then Flair just, you know, had a fucking Vietnam flashback.
Yeah, and Flair's like, "No, I hate this guy still."
Yeah.
And he's like, "All right, block off a room." And he's like, "I got you, buddy." And then he fucking...
Yeah. And then, you know, 6 months later, Beth decides, "Fuck it, I'm leaving Rick." And then Arn decides, "All right, well, I guess I got to leave Rick too."
But they were still... If that's when it happened...
They were all right, so they were still close, but they weren't as close as they once were. Like
they kept up appearances very well.
Yeah.
WWE at least shipped to where it made it seem like, because they were always together, it felt like.
But like they were together on camera, but they couldn't be together like behind, like they could not go out drinking because Arn's wife was just like, "We're taking Beth's side."
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, and it's, you know, it is what it is. And Arn, you know, loves his wife, doesn't want to be married 9 times like Rick was. And that's his prerogative, all right? If you're going to listen to your wife and do what she wants, that just means you're smart with your money.
Yeah. All right, my turn. Number 4?
Yeah.
I have... kind of a different one, and one that...
Bam Neely and Chavo Guerrero.
No. I have a bigger one than that. Bam Neely and... Well, never mind.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding. the Edgeheads.
Hawkins and Ryder?
Yeah. I'm just kidding. Fuck that.
Oh.
No, I have one of the best odd couples in history, and something that did not last as long as it should have. I have Spike Dudley and Molly Holly.
So, and that kind of goes back to, you know, me picking Hardcore and Crash, because, like, the Dudleys and the Hollies did not get along back then, because I remember, like, when Spike and Molly...
And that's why it was... And that's what made it work, though, because it was like a fucked-up version of Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
And you had the Dudleys and you had the Hollies.
Well, it was more like Hatfield-McCoy, right? Because in the Hatfields and McCoys, didn't, like, a Hatfield and a McCoy fuck or something?
They did in the show. I don't know if that was part of the real-life version of it.
I don't know.
When they did the show, though, they had that.
Okay, so you kind of, so, like, there, it was kind of like that. And it was funny because I remember Molly saying how much she liked Spike and talking to Hardcore about it because she thought Hardcore was more level-headed. And Hardcore's just like, look, Crash is right, you know, for once. Like, the Dudleys cannot be trusted.
But it was funny that you have these two teams, and by the way, and even though Dudleys were kind of heel, they were still loved.
Yeah, they didn't go heel yet. They didn't go heel until, like, they thought Molly screwed them over.
But it just, because you have these two tough teams, and then you have, like, a pure innocent part of both of them, with Molly and then Spike. And
yeah.
Crash was kind of that innocent spot, too, but it was just cute. And it worked. And I liked, like, him in the whole brain damage thing. And he was kind of, I don't know. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, and it was funny, too, because, like, when Kurt Angle beat the shit out of Spike Dudley, and then, like, Molly went to go get the Dudley and said, you need to help Spike. And then they happen to walk right in front of Hardcore and Crash. So Hardcore and Crash are like, fuck it, we're going to hit him. And they're like, all right, we're putting her through a table. And Spike's like, she didn't set you up. And Bubba's just like, shut up. We know what happened. It's like, watch the replay, you fat fuck.
Yeah. And it was just, and Spike was always, because to me, Spike's one of the more underrated performers of all time.
Oh, God, yeah.
And he's top 10 underdogs of all time.
Yeah.
And he's just, like, so good for not getting very much credit. And Molly is literally the same thing for the women. Molly was ahead of her time, one of the best workers, one of the best people to work with Trish and all this stuff. Molly was really good.
And people
And she wasn't hot.
People say that, like, if you put somebody in the Hall of Fame for just being the nicest human being on the face of the earth, you're going to do that for Molly.
Yeah, but she was also good, too.
Yeah.
She didn't suck at wrestling.
Oh, God, no, not at all.
And
but what I'm just saying is that, like, you know, we talked earlier about how nobody
sweet.
Had anything against Sensational Sherry. Nobody could say
I've
anything.
Heard everybody talk nice. I agree.
Nobody
like, X-Pac was putting her over for 15
yeah.
minutes.
X-Pac had said, he's like, she is the sweetest person I had ever met in this business.
Yeah. And it's very cool. And it was cool, and it's kind of, it's sweet that she was like, the one that didn't have to take her tits out.
Yeah.
She was the one that didn't have to get the lingerie. And even though Trish kind of started making fun of that, their angle, when Trish would just
start, oh, yeah, like the granny panties. And then, like,
when she started taking her pants off, like, she beat her and then she took her pants off in front of her.
Yeah. And then fucking when she did the hair versus hair match against Victoria at WrestleMania 20, and then King's just like, well, we've seen from time to time, JR, where Molly does wear granny panties. And JR goes, what the hell does this have to do with this wrestling match? Like, seriously. This is a hair versus hair match, and you're talking about granny panties. And it's just like, well, I'm just saying, JR, get your mind out of the gutter, King.
That was perfect about having a married man and a pervert
yeah.
next to each other.
That was a real slobber knocker, wasn't it? I provided the slobber, they provided the knocker.
Still the best team.
Yeah.
But... even though JR now, oh, my God, he needs to hang it up. I love him, but holy shit.
Yeah.
You're just old,
yeah.
brother. It's still, I more respect than anybody of all time. Like, the greatest play-by-play of all time. Better than Gorilla Monsoon. Better than Gordon Sully. JR is the greatest. But now.
Yeah,
it's
now
old.
He
it's
needs to retire.
He's too old. He doesn't remember their names. The moves are too much nowadays. He just needs to be done.
Yeah, because, like, and...
I agree with that.
I do give him credit, though,
for still wanting
to be part of the business.
Yeah.
But it's just like...
But be an agent.
Yeah.
Be a production manager. Be whatever, anything else. Be that guy that talks in
the ears of, like, get Excalibur's ear and tell him not to be a dipshit.
Yeah, or be Tony's right-hand man. Do whatever you got to do, but I don't think he needs to be the... Tony Schiavone still has it.
Yeah.
JR doesn't. And I don't mean that to be mean, because JR is better all time than Tony, but Tony still has something to where he can add, and him and Excalibur could do a good show by themselves.
Tony, Excalibur, and Taz, even though Taz is the cocksucking butt fucker.
Taz is so good at commentary.
Okay. The three of them are fine.
Yes.
Although I'm waiting for the day to where Tony Schiavone just hauls off and hits Taz.
All right. Who's your number three?
I don't know.
Might be good if you did.
Al Snow and Steve Blackman.
Really good.
Awesome.
It was like a lesser version of Rock and Sock almost, but it was a fun character with a no-nonsense serious character, and he kind of brought life into Steve Blackman. And
yeah,
Steve Blackman put a seriousness into him. It really benefited each guy.
Well, and the funny thing is that, like, Steve Blackman is one of those guys, and I am a Steve Blackman fan.
Me too.
Okay? But Steve Blackman was one of those guys that had his personality surgically removed.
Yeah.
But Al Snow was kind of able to, like, some of the shit that they did together, like when Steve Blackman did stand-up comedy in an old folks' home.
Yeah. And when they were in Green Bay and he put the cheese thing on his head.
Yeah.
The cheese hat.
Like, they were just comedy. Because Al Snow, again, I don't think he's the funny. Although, like, I follow Al on Facebook and he has some funny shit on there. To the point to where it's just like.
He was funny. You can tell he's buddies with Mick Foley. Like, he had humor to him.
Yeah.
And the characters that he did were funny.
Yeah. And he does have a good mind for the wrestling business. Like, if they did it, honest to God, I think Tony Khan, like, because they talk about how Tony Khan needs to hire somebody that will like, you know, kind of discipline people and all that. I think Al Snow would be that person, because Al Snow is
probably the greatest trader in the business.
Yeah. Because he'll be like, you know what? He'll kind of take people in and be like, look, you know, you're acting like an ass.
Yep.
But as far as Snow and Blackman go, like, their team was kind of short-lived, but I don't know, like, that 2000 WWE, to me, like, they were one of the bright spots.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
Can't argue that.
Good.
They were good. All right, Eric, who's your number three?
Mine is Sammy and Kevin Owens. Another duo that were our best friends to this day. We just got back together as they're reigning and defending tag team champions right now.
At least until next Friday.
God forbid they lose. Yeah, I hope not. But, but yeah, these two have been best friends since the indie scene, ROH, PWG, I think, I want to say. I don't know if they were together in PWG, but ROH, they had this rivalry in ROH, classic rivalries in NXT, and from Canada. They're both from Canada. They're just great people, great friends. Great duo.
So, like, I loved the Ring of Honor stuff when they were a team, because they were, like, Kevin Owens loved to pick on El Generico, but
yep.
He would not let anybody else pick on him.
Yeah.
And to me, that was fun to watch.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, they get here and all this stuff, which, like, the two of them as heels was fun. I felt like they're better heels than they are babyface.
Although I do love Kevin Owens as a babyface.
They're just on such a good run now that you can't really say that.
Yeah.
Because they're so over. They're the two most over babyfaces in the world right now. So you can't really say that they're better as heels. But their stuff with Shane and stuff, that was good. And Sammy fucking over Shane for Kevin. And
which, to be honest with you, like, when Sammy turned heel and then he started doing that, you know, the kind of dance at the beginning, like, to his music, like how he used to do when he was a babyface. But then he used to do, like, he did it kind of like in a heel way or whatever. I'm not going to say what I used to call
it. It
drove me nuts. Off air.
Yeah.
But I was just like, oh, my God, what a fucking douchebag to do. Somebody needs to drop a piano on this motherfucker, like, right now. Because he's just acting so douchey.
They're just, and that's why, and in theory, storyline-wise and the way they are as character actors, they are really good as heels, and they might even be better heels. But the story of real life and the fact that we have the internet now and we know that these guys were best friends, like, fucking coming up in the business, and these guys wrestled in gyms in front of 20 people, and they fucking, like, really paid their dues together, and then they got to the big show, made separate paths, and now they're, like, back together, and, like, it's just too good of a story to where they have to be on this list, you know?
Yeah.
They're so good. It's such a fucking nice, romanticized, like, Cinderella story for the both of them that you had, like, fucking Kevin Owens is more over this year than he was last year. And last year, he made a event in Night 1 against Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Right.
And he's more over this year being in a tag match with Sammy. He's more over. More people like him, more people don't. That's nuts. And that's how good this thing is.
Yeah. And what's funny, too, about Kevin Owens is Kevin Owens is one of those guys that, like, he can be a dick.
He's so funny, though.
But he's hilarious. Like, he's awesome. There was the one time, like, he helped the Street Profits beat Gallows and Anderson, and he said in the backstage interview, he goes, you know what, I happen to like you guys so much that I'm going to wait on you a little while before I turn on you. And Montez is just like, oh, really, you're not going to turn on us? He goes, not yet. It's going to happen at some point, but not yet. Like, I'm going to wait a while. And I, like, it's the funniest fucking thing.
It is. It is very good.
Yeah.
All right. My number three, I have a little heel couple that underrated but happened at one of my favorite WrestleManias and one of my favorite stories, and I wish this thing would have gone longer. I have Trish Stratus and Christian.
Nobody saw that coming, by the way.
Nobody saw it coming, and I feel like if they gave them more of a chance and let them do more stuff, that they could have been what Edge and Lita were.
Well, I think it also had to do with the fact that Christian got
hurt. I was thinking the same thing.
Yes. Yes, and I understand Christian, but if you take all that and it doesn't happen, I really do think that they're a better version of Edge and Lita.
Yeah. No, I
they could have been the top heel couple. She could have been the women's champion. He could have found his way to a world title, and they could have been a heel dominant power couple.
Right, and that's the thing is I believe that there wasn't it was going to happen, and I want to say that the Bad Blood match was supposed to, I don't think it was going to be like Kane was a backup. I want to say Christian was going to get the shot.
Really? That's crazy.
I mean, I don't he was either going to get the shot or he was do up for one.
I mean, it was not a good run. And she was a part of that. And Tomko, and it just all worked. I liked those two together a lot. I thought they were a good, like, mean couple.
And that's one of those things, because at that WrestleMania, which, by the way, the fact that we were able to get that, and I had no clue we were getting that.
Yeah.
Awesome. Until, like, 3 days beforehand, when Mom tells us at the kitchen table, she goes, oh, yeah, we're ordering WrestleMania on Sunday. Eh? What are you talking about? He goes, oh, your grandfather really wants to watch WrestleMania, so we're getting it.
Mm-hmm.
And I called him and I said, thank you.
You're the best.
And then we ended up getting it. And then I just remember it being, because I had such a huge crush on Trish at the time. And, but just like her.
What guy did it?
Nathan Lane.
Oh.
But like, just seeing her turn on Jericho, it's just like, you no good bitch. But, like, I don't think any – I mean, I'm sure, like, it had been reported in the dirt sheets and all that that she was probably going to turn. But, like, fans that had no idea what the fuck a dirt sheet even was.
Yeah, no one knew.
Probably were just like
– It was a big deal.
Yeah.
It was a nut shot heard around the world. It was good. All right, who's your number two?
I don't know.
We'll figure it out. I want to get the fuck out of here. Great radio.
Hello?
I'm right here.
Eric thought we fucking disconnected.
Okay.
Goldust and Marlena.
That's a good one.
So I was torn between the two of them or Mark Merrow and Sable.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Both
didn't end well in real life or storyline.
Well, and the fucked up thing is, like, with Goldust and Terry, it was, they were really starting to have, that Brian Pillman storyline did nothing to help them.
Yeah.
Okay.
It can be so beautiful when they take real life and put it into a storyline, and it can make the best art, but it's also extremely fucked up to people's personal lives.
Yeah. Well, how do you think little Dakota felt? She's 3 years old. She's being paraded on TV. By the way, Terry Runnels was the character Marlena worked because she was a mysterious, you know, troublemaking character. You show her as that sweet mother, that doesn't work.
Yeah. She did work after that, though, as a bitchy, the horny little she-devil.
No, that worked. What I'm saying is the sweet woman, the sweet caring mother, that didn't work.
They saw the success that they did with Mankind and making him, like, breathing humanity into that character, and they said, hey, we can do that with Goldust. The only problem was what worked about Goldust was what you said, the mystery.
Yeah.
And the bravado, the unknown about him and Marlena. That's what made that work. Now you pull the curtain off that and you show people the inside, and that takes the interest away. It's not like Mick to where it makes it more interesting because you see that he's a young kid that always wanted it. You just show these two people that are in a loving couple. Well, that's cool, but who gives a fuck?
Right.
I can go downstairs and see somebody in a loving couple. Well, you couldn't, but a lot of other people did.
Yeah. But, like, but, yeah, like, and the funny thing is that, like, with Goldust and Marlena and, like, all the risque stuff, because everybody remembers the old Raw magazine, right? Like, when it first came out in 96.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That was pretty much, because you had the WWF magazine, which was, you know, for the kids and all that. Raw magazine was pretty much meant for adults. Because they had some pretty violent and fucked up shit in those magazines. And one of the things they had was they had Goldust and Marlena kind of do a nude photo shoot where she's laying on top of him and they're both covered in gold body paint. And it's just like,
I remember
that. Huh?
I said I remember that.
Yeah. Hey, it's under your bed. But, like, and I just remember, like, seeing that, and I'm kind of flipping through the pages of it, right? Because I used to, when I used to go to the grocery store with Papa all the time, I would just stand in the, you know, magazine aisle, read all the magazines or whatever, because back at that time, you had more than one wrestling magazine.
Right.
And I would just read that, and, like, I was reading the Raw magazine, and I, you know, really wanted that. And I asked Bob, I said, can I get it? He takes a look at it, sees the cover, which is Goldust and Marlena, opens it up, sees this one picture of him. He goes, your grandmother will kill me. No. Okay. You know, didn't argue with Grandpa. But, like, it was stuff like that that made the two of them work. It was the humanity side that it was just kind of like, okay, like, I get it. You're trying to show the humane side of them, but do we really need to see that?
I agree.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Who's your number two?
Triple H and Stephanie McMahon. Real life couple, obviously. Daddy's little girl and Triple H.
You put a
yeah.
lot of real life couples
this,
on your list. Are you trying to get invited to like a family dinner or something?
Sure. Yeah. I would love to have Triple H on the podcast someday.
I think I'm pretty sure I fucked that up.
Yeah, it happens.
You know, you can only say that a guy fucks his best friend more than he fucks his wife so many times before the one guy takes offense to it.
Yeah, that's true. And it is Triple H, though. But anyways, yeah, this is probably the most recognized wrestling couple, real-life wrestling couple in pro wrestling. This is probably one of the most recognized besides Elizabeth and Macho Man, but in the modern era, they are. Stephanie doesn't work for the company anymore, so she says, but, I mean, she doesn't, but Triple H does. He's the CEO.
Chief Content Officer.
Close enough. these two are just real-life couple. They go everywhere together. They did go everywhere together before she had decided not to work with the company anymore. But, yeah. What else is there to say about these two?
Yeah, I agree.
The funny thing about these two is that, like, you know, when they got together, everybody knows how they got together, and the fact that they were able to kind of make it work. I mean, they've been together for 23 years now. And like, first of all, I could not imagine anybody being married to a McMahon for that long, especially a McMahon that pretty much is Vince with lady parts. So like the fact that Triple H has survived that long without wanting to kill a member of that family, good for him.
All right, you ready for my number two?
Takes a lot of patience.
All right, my number two, and I did want to give a shout-out to some of the worst relationships first, because I have some of these in my head that I kind of thought were kind of funny, but they never really worked.
Yeah.
One of them being Kane and Lita. Because I thought that was a funny idea, and it kind of helped turn him babyface, but it was a little too rapey.
Yeah.
Another one is Zack Ryder and Eve Torres.
That was just stupid.
That poor fucker. He got kind of fucked over by that situation. Another really bad one, but I have to bring it up, is Mark Henry and Mae Young.
Yeah.
That would have been Clintus number one. What are you talking about?
And then another really bad one is Tori Wilson's father, Al Wilson, and Dawn Marie.
Yeah, which, by the way, that was in poor taste by WWE to kill the guy off and then publish in your magazine like 10 months later that he attended his daughter's wedding. bless you. Like,
they brought a Ouija board. It was fantastic.
Yeah. Which, by the way, Al Wilson now has unfortunately passed away.
Yes.
He is no longer with us. But I swear to God, like, who didn't want to be Al Wilson? Well, Dawn Marie at one time.
Dude, when she was crying by the casket, he, like, sat up. That was fucking hilarious.
they had to cut away.
But it was so good. My actual number two is something that happened kind of recently, and it's the last, like, love relationship because I have a bromance number one. My number two is when the big man finally gets the girl. I went with Mandy Rose and Otis.
You know, and that went farther than I thought that the WWE would take it.
Yeah, and it worked. He got a Money in the Bank out of it. She was a nice, supportive girlfriend. Another one I was thinking about was Bray Wyatt and Alexa Bliss, because that was another weird one that shouldn't have worked.
Yeah, I thought about that, too.
But I think Otis and Mandy, because it's like everybody wants to see that story of like the like he should not have even he shouldn't even like breathe in the same room that she farts.
Right.
Know? But she fucking is so.
And if he farts, she wouldn't be able to breathe in that room.
No, she wouldn't be with us anymore. But those two were so fun together, and they both played it up really well to where it worked.
Yeah, and then,
and it showed how good she was too.
Yeah.
And it was her idea, even though she was married. So
well, that's what she had even said. She's just she goes, I pitched it. You know, her boyfriend or whoever the fuck it was at the time said, you know, go ahead. Her fiance is a guy by the name of Tito Sabatelli, who used to work for WWE Developmental and used to work with Otis.
Okay.
And he also happens to be a friend of Otis.
So he was like, fuck yeah.
So he said to Otis, he's like, yeah, go ahead, bang my girlfriend. I don't care. He goes, you're a friend of mine.
And it worked.
He didn't really bang her, though, did he?
No.
Well, I mean, you have to sell the story.
You have to sell the story.
You
got to
do it once for the gimmick.
Yeah. So, like, no, they didn't actually bang, but, you know, Tito's just like, dude, you know, you happen to be my buddy. Go ahead.
Those long nights on the road, though, you never know.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, I just described the way most pornos start out, but...
That would have been an interesting one. I would have done that one, too. All right, what's your number one? Well, let's get out of here.
Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan.
The best commentary duo of all time?
Yeah. Mainly the reason why primetime wrestling lasted for as long as it did. You know, in the spring of 91, when they went to, like, this studio format where... They had the live studio audience, which was cool to a point, but nothing beats Gorilla and Bobby. Especially like when they would do their like remotes at different places.
Yeah.
I'll never forget when they went to Busch Gardens to look for the Bushwhackers. And Bobby Heenan was getting like seasick or something like that, or they were on like a truck or whatever. Bobby Heenan was getting sick or something like that, and they find the Bushwhackers, and Gorilla's like, "Hey, Bushwhackers, how you doing? Welcome to the U.S. of A. and all that stuff." And like, Bobby and Gorilla were just fucking hilarious with one another.
They were so good, and it was so emotional when he got inducted in the Hall of Fame, and he was just like, "I just wish Gorilla was here."
Yeah,
it was so sweet.
Yeah, and when Gorilla passed away. Bobby had said to Tony, because Tony Schiavone was in charge of all the announcers at the time, he said to Tony, he said, hey, I'm paying tribute to Gorilla Monsoon. Like, can you bring up Gorilla Monsoon passing away so I can talk about him? And Bischoff's just like, Gorilla never worked for WCW, don't do it. And Bobby looked at Tony and said, please bring it up so I can talk about him. I really want to talk about him.
Yeah.
Tony's like, all right. So he brings it up, Bischoff screaming in his ear, saying, what the fuck are you doing? You're talking about a WWE. Or no, Bischoff wasn't even there. It was Nash screaming in his ear because Nash had Booker at the time. And Nash was like, what the fuck are you doing? Because Nash didn't like Gorilla Monsoon.
Oh.
So like, what the fuck are you doing? And Tony's just like, he wants to talk about him. Let him talk about him. And then, you know, Bobby just got, like, all emotional and shit, which, again, you can't blame the guy. Gorilla was his best friend.
Yeah. And they made magic together.
Yeah.
Even, like, Cole and JR and King, you know they're not best friends. You know they're not hanging out. They might not even do dinner with each other. But they are linked together for life now.
Yeah.
JR and King are linked together for life because of that work. And they know that. And they will always be brothers in there. Even if they don't hang out, they are still brothers. And it's the same thing for Bobby and
Gorilla. And like when they actually did like the commentary for some of the events they commentated, like I still think Survivor Series 90, 91, Royal Rumble 92, and WrestleMania 8 are three of my favorite pay-per-views of all time, just because the two of them were on commentary.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the best, like pay-per-views, like quality or match quality-wise or whatever, but listening to the two of them on commentary
was awesome,
especially like when Bobby Heenan said during Undertaker versus Jake Roberts at WrestleMania, he goes, "Monsoon, death never takes a holiday." And Gorilla goes, "Oh my God." He goes, "These things just come to me. I feel like I'm working with two brilliant minds." And Monsoon goes, "I've never seen you work with one."
That's funny. That's very good.
Yeah.
It's a great number one.
Thank you.
Eric, who's your number one?
Macho Man and Miss Elizabeth.
I mean, that's the
Ultimate
method.
Couple.
It had to be on somebody's list.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Yeah.
And Jimmy, if you're listening to this, if you already haven't thrown your back out again, Elizabeth was useful. You know, she's one. I mean, I've always had a crush on Elizabeth. So, like, she was useful. She's definitely, you know, she was a part of Macho Man's character. We can, you know, if somebody doesn't like her, you know, that's fine. But, you know, there's no reason to hate her.
She was just a manager and she didn't do much. And, you know, it's not wrong in saying that, but those two are truly the king and queen of wrestling. There is no other it couple. There's no those. That is, like I said, mom and dad earlier. They are the king and the queen, and there is no other. Every other couple that they've tried to do has tried to emulate that in some way or form or fashion. That is the mecca. That's the top one. And like even like little like when fucking they were in that match with Andre and she showed her panties.
Yeah,
and that's like a not Elizabeth thing to do. Elizabeth would never do that. It's not in character. And it's not like she got fully naked. She just lifted her skirt up a little bit. And then she distracted the heels and they got the win. It would always, those two were just perfect together. And it never felt, like that was the raunchiest they ever went. And that still felt classy watching it.
Yeah.
They
By
never,
the way, having a role of Jesse Ventura's tongue all the way back in his mouth.
Yeah. So those two were just, it always felt classy and never felt tasteless. And it's just, you really believe that they were in love, which they were at the time.
Yeah.
So.
Now, how long do you think I'm going to have to wait to ask Jimmy to do something since I just called him out on the show?
I don't know. You ready for my number one?
Yeah.
Drum roll. And this is going to be a controversial one. I went with a bromance. I went with a manager superstar duo.
Oh, God.
I went with Mr. Walrus, Paul Heyman, and Brock Lesnar.
Lesnar.
They're best friends in real life, even though it doesn't seem like they would be. And they're just they are the ultimate duo. And for a long time, whenever you see Brock, now they don't because of storyline, but Brock would only come back under the, like, we wouldn't have Brock Lesnar if Paul wasn't there, because Brock said when he was coming back, "Put me with Paul or I doing it."
Yes.
And that's how he's always been. And he travels with Paul. He fucking does everything. Paul is his right-hand man. And they are best friends. And they are
he's
good
the ultimate.
Duo.
He's the OG of Paul
and when you think about just two people that really, they bring out the strengths and the weaknesses, fucking, the only thing that Paul Heyman's ever going to win is a hot dog eating contest. He doesn't have a physical bone in his body unless he's walking to the fridge. But he's the best talker on planet Earth. Talk so well, and he can make anybody seem like the fucking man. And then you have this big, powerful beast who can lift ATVs and fucking RVs and, you know, big 40 Equinoxes. And he can bench them for breakfast. But he's got the voice of a toddler that got kicked in the nuts.
Yeah.
So Brock can't cut a promo to save his life. Brock sounds like this. Brock does not sound intimidating at all. And he honestly sucks at cutting promos. But so you put him with the best talker ever, and you have magic. And you have this beast, this like MMA fighter who can destroy anybody, and this guy that's fucking selling the fight so well and selling the matches and talking him up to be what he is. And it just worked.
And the funny thing about the two of them is that, like, you go back to, like, the early days.
They were great men, too.
Yeah. And because Brock was like this big, you know, this big prospect, and, you know, they called him, they said he was like the future of the business or whatever.
The next big thing.
Yeah. And you had Heyman, who, was off TV for a while, but they brought him back together because you could not get rid of Paul Heyman because they didn't have wart remover big enough.
And he was Brock's agent.
Yeah. And it was just like it worked because you had Paul Heyman who could say whatever he wanted and nobody could really get to him because if you did, Brock Lesnar would split you in half with his teeth.
Yeah. It was good.
Yeah.
It was really good, and this was our top 10 pro wrestling couples of all time.
What about, did you do Eric's number one?
Yeah, he went before me. And we'll see everybody next week. Make sure to check out all our other shit, and we love you all.
Next week, do we want to do the top 10 on the Bushwhackers for the tribute to Butch, or do we want to do the top 10 for the whoever wins as King of the Ring?
We'll do the Bushwhackers top 10.
Okay.
So everybody check that out, Top 10 Moments and Matches, the Bushwhackers next week, and we'll see everybody next time.
All right, later.
Later.